This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Going to start off with, obviously, it is 9/11. And 22 years ago today, to me, seems like it was yesterday, to be honest. Everyone I've talked to today, same kind of feeling. Knew where we were, what we were doing, who we were doing it with, what we were talking about. It seems burnt into our memories, into our minds, into who we are. And I'll tell you, I remember, you know, every detail of the day. I was back home in Cleveland. My grandmother was having a knee replacement done. We were at the Cleveland Clinic. I woke up unnaturally early that day, and it was like everyone says, it was a bright, beautiful, amazing day. The kind of day that you don't forget often, but not the kind of day you associate with the most tragic event of a lifetime. And, you know, I remember, you know, clearly we were around our family. Everyone was there. And I remember at the moment that the news came on the TV, you know, what we were talking about, because we were busting each other's shoes, as families do. And I remember the moment it happened. You could see the faces, the sorrow, the dismay, the confusion. And as the day went on, as the day unfolded, the anger and the division that then became. And that's one of those things that has stuck with me, because I was in a place, the Cleveland Clinic is a very diverse environment. Virtually people, it's like the United Nations, if you will, because it's an extraordinarily large teaching hospital. And in those hours that I was in that place, because we were there morning to night, you could see already us tearing apart. And, you know, I couldn't help that day while my grandmother was in surgery, because while it was going on, she was under the knife. Remembering, thinking this was someone who Pearl Harbor changed her life. That was their generation. And for her to go to sleep and wake up with another Pearl Harbor type attack in her lifetime, what that meant. And then, you know, we talked pretty much the whole time she was out about that, because a lot of my family members had military backgrounds, and immediately the older ones, her brother and her brother was like, you know, this is an attack. This is, you know, and he focused right in on that. And we talked about, what is this going to mean? You know, who is it? And everyone, you know, went to where eventually we figured out it was. And watching the behavior of people is something I'm never going to forget. And in those hours that my grandmother was under the knife, we talked about what the changes to the country were going to be. And it seems so eerie to me now. And I think about this every year on this day, how right we were, that this was going to, ultimately it was going to bring us together immediately. But long term, this was going to rip us apart, because you could already see the divisions. We weren't the homogenous country that the World War II generation was. We were a much more diverse country even then. Because you could see the reactions of the people in the hospital. I remember two people of kind of Middle Eastern descent, you know, talking to each other and going, "Did you do that?" And it was not funny. And I remember thinking, how are we going to get past this? I remember driving home afterwards and gas prices going up to like $9 a gallon. Obviously, the city of Cleveland came back the next day and said, you go undo all of that damage you did. But that night, that's what it was. And that gave way to color-coded fear, if you remember. Remember the Tom Ridge, the color codes, the red for severe, the orange for high, and we were orange a lot, the yellow for elevated, the blue for guarded, and if it was green, it was low. It was rarely green, as I remember. Always throwing us in the yellow and the orange to keep people on edge. And that gave way to coded language then. You know, radical Islamic, extremist, terrorist, all those words meant to incite, to anger, to pit us against, because war. Now look, I go back and I say I was all in favor of going into Afghanistan after bin Laden. 100%. You had me at, we're going to go get the people who did this. I get revenge. I get retribution. I get that 100%. And was all in favor. And I take responsibility for being all in favor of going, yeah, go get him. Whatever we need to do, whatever we have at our disposal, you go get those criminals, you go get those people, and you hold them accountable. However, I'm not a death penalty person, but you know what? If that's what happens, that's what happens. Then we made this bizarre turn. Got to go to Iraq. I was 100% against that. Again, tearing at the country, tearing us apart. And ever since then, it's been slicing and dicing. You know, I put out on Facebook today, I go, you know, everyone remembers where they were today. Everyone remembers what they were doing and who they were talking to. Everyone who was alive. But do you remember yesterday? Do you remember what the country was like on the 10th? Do you remember not being divided as much? Do you remember not being as fearful? Do you remember being not as hateful? Because they used that masterfully to pit us against one another and everyone else. And globally, that response, because look, I wasn't alone in go after get bin Laden after 9/11. I was not alone in this. The country was basically unified. Go get them. But we made that turn. And we destabilized that whole region of the world. And we've destabilized the world because of it. I'm curious where folks were, what they were doing, what their thoughts on this day are. It's one of those things that, you know, it's hard to explain. But my fear at the time, and I talked about this quite extensively at that point, we're going to send people into harm's way. Because I remember watching those men come back from Vietnam. And we're not going to take care of them. And you look what we did to the 9/11 responders. How long it took to get them the funding that they needed. how long it took to get the VA budget and money, and we still don't have all of it. The rich got richer. The poor got poorer. And I remember at the time, you know, when we went into Iraq talking about Smedley Butler and the war is a racket, the rich get richer and the poor get dead frames. And here we are. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Again, I go back to this, you know, just being ripped apart. And again, look, I look at the Republican Party, and it's amazing to me that in this moment, you've got Republicans defending the Saudis, and the picture of Trump with his hand on the orb with the Saudis and the coziness there, the money Elon Musk probably got for Twitter. I mean, it's there's a lot. There is a lot here. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And I think that, you know, that this is, as you pointed out, you know, one of those seminal events in a generation's history. You know, there are various times that define each generation. For some, it was Pearl Harbor. Others, you know, they will ask themselves, where were you when you heard that Kennedy was shot? And then, you know, moving forward, the generation that for whom 9/11 happened, whether you were in elementary school, high school, college, or in the working world. I was downtown. I was in downtown Chicago, living in one of those high rises, 21st floor, floor to ceiling windows, and behind my television set was the Sears Tower. You know, you could see it in the background because I was living downtown. And you know, the whole, so I'm watching the coverage, and like everyone else, I thought, okay, well, a plane hit the first building. I mean, that could be anything. I mean, how long was it before a plane was going to end up hitting a high rise somewhere? But, you know, as soon as that second plane came in, you said, holy, you're like, what? Look how big that thing is. Oh, and as soon as it hit, you knew right then and there, never, like everyone else did, okay, this is not an accident. And then we all started to look up. You know, my friends who were in the neighborhood, we'd call each other, okay, I mean, you know, John Hancock Building, Sears Tower. And then we came with the find many months and years later that they actually had planned to target the Sears Tower. But that never came to fruition. But as you pointed out, you know, we then sold the American public, because like every war, people get scared and then they get angry and they want to lash out, and you can sell them on anything. And then the American people just didn't want to make the distinctions. You know, I am no fan of the Taliban, but the Taliban were not Al-Qaeda, and they had no designs outside of Afghanistan. They had allowed Al-Qaeda refuge in Afghanistan. And for those people who don't know it, they were willing to give them up to us to keep us out of their country. But that wasn't good enough for us, apparently. And so obviously we need to prosecute that war. And you can have a debate as to whether or not we belong there post 9/11. That there is a debate to be had there. there is no debate to be had with regard to trying to create the dubious relationship between 9/11 and the need to invade Iraq. It was just ridiculous, but that's how that war was sold, and we all know it. And unfortunately, you know, the Fourth Estate and a lot of other people who were supposed to be the watchdogs in this democracy, this constitutional republic, were asleep at the wheel or just afraid to say anything. There were a few people who did, but, you know, by and large, they were drowned out. And, you know, and we're going to be paying that price for those wars for decades to come, because the people who died there were going to be supporting their families. The people who were hurt physically were going to be supporting them. And that mental trauma doesn't go away. You know, this was the longest war that we had ever fought in this country's history. And that means you had a whole generation. You could have fought in that war, had a child, that child could have gone off and fought in the same war. And in some cases that happened. That's how long we're going to be paying for this many, many years down the road. And so we need to consider that every time we think about prosecuting a war somewhere, not just what it's going to cost today, but what it's going to cost 30, 40, 50 years from now. Because 20-year-olds become 70 and 80-year-olds. And when they need the VA and they need other services, you know, you have to pay for that. So is it worth it, and who's willing to pay that bill? And that's not even, you know, taking into consideration the lives that were taken overseas prosecuting the war. And I'm one of these people who believes that, you know, the United States should not defend itself. Absolutely, that there are enemies out there, and there are times when it's necessary to use the military to defend this country's interest and to defend our national security. But at the same time, there are times when, in the name of doing that, we have committed wholesale slaughter. And what we did to Iraq as a country, I mean, it's almost unforgivable. And let's face it, we knew full well what was going to happen. The idea that you're going to bomb somebody into the Stone Age, and then you're going to publicly announce, oh, by the way, we're now engaged in the process of nation building. I mean, that is a multi-generational commitment of trillions upon trillions of dollars. And, I mean, so what is the plan here? We're going to go from country to country doing this? Because that essentially would have been the formula if we had decided to go down this route indefinitely. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what it means for us. We don't seem to learn our lessons like a lot of, you know, great powers in the world. We had to learn it in Vietnam, and then we sort of were modest for a while. And then, you know, the first Gulf War sort of reinvigorated Americans and said, oh, okay, yeah, we won the Cold War and we're now the greatest power in the world. And I firmly believe that that 9/11 was even more devastating, because those of us who are old enough to remember, you know, the 1990s I consider to be possibly the last great decade in American history. You know, yeah, crime went down significantly. Wages went up. Unemployment went down. I mean, it was a really great decade. I mean, the introduction of what we enjoy today in terms of modern technology, the internet and personal computers and all this sort of thing. And then came 9/11, and it all came crashing down. The party came to an end. So it wasn't just that it was just an average decade. It was a really good decade. And then 9/11 happens, and everything changes. We go to war. And then, of course, you had the economic crash of 2008, 2009, the worst in a generation since really the Great Depression. And then, of course, that takes us into the presidency of Barack Obama, I think, hanging in the right direction. But, of course, that invariably leads us to the presidency of Donald Trump, because that's part of the backlash of the election of Barack Obama, who, of course, won in no small part because people were disillusioned with the leadership of the Republican Party in terms of the wars and the economy and so forth. So all of these things are connected. We get to exactly where we are today by going back to that day.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. You did a much better opening than I would have done. I appreciate the thought, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Spot on. I mean, it's exactly the thoughts right there. Let's go to real quick. Let's get Alice on line two. Alice, how are you doing today?
I'm insane as usual. I remember 9/11 very well. And I had worked the night before a night shift, and my mother called me at like 10 till 9 in the morning, and my mother was starting to go into dementia. And she was like, she's telling me, she had woke me up, and she was telling me, and I thought she was just like hallucinating again. Then my son got on the phone, and he was like, no, Mom, it happened. So I turned the TV on, and I remember that entire day I worked day shift. And we had the television on. And I remember later that evening, the roads were just completely dead. And one of my customers, his son, was working in the towers.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't until like 2 days later that he found out that his son was alive. And it was just, I remember how everyone just pulled together. So, and the thing is, what a lot of people conveniently forget, I think it was 15 or 16 of the terrorists were Saudi Arabians.
Yep.
It wasn't Afghanis.
Yep.
It was Saudi Arabia. But there you are.
There you go.
So
thanks,
you have
Alice.
A good evening, Rick. Oh, and check your email.
Will do. That's the other part. And again, I go back to Trump with the orbs and Kushner with the $2 billion. You kind of got to wonder. Let's go to Julie in Minnesota on line three. Julie, how are you?
Hi. I just heard you the last several minutes. She is so right. We have to tell the younger generation that's been born since 9/11 that we went after the wrong people. You know, we got the Saudi Arabian family out of the United States on the evening that 9/11 happened, and we went after the wrong people. And we have to let the newer generation know about that. You know, I had a relative that was in the CIA for about 35 years, and he retired about the time, shortly after 9/11, but he still worked for the CIA independently. He was not an agent. He was a little further up the line. He's passed now, so I feel like I can talk about this. I asked him, do you think we should go into Iraq? And right away he said, no, I'm more concerned about North Korea. And I was kind of surprised because I'll tell you something, Rick. This was the most conservative man you can imagine, born in a small town in the upper Midwest. He and his family always voted Republican, but he didn't hesitate a minute. He thought going into, he didn't actually, you know, criticize the president, but he said, no, we shouldn't be going in there. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. I'll just say one more thing. My car was stolen the night of 9/11 because there were such rumors about gas prices spiking. And I think that I went over to my mother's apartment building, and I think that's the reason my car was stolen. Some people in Minneapolis just panicked. They just freaked out.
Was it just Minneapolis?
Gas prices.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the call, Julie. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. No, I mean, having your car stolen on that night, again, something else to remember. But, you know, it's an interesting thing she brings up there, you know, because I've known people over the years, you know, who are in the intelligence world who are like, you know, no reason to go into Iraq. You had Iraq. You had our installed tin pot dictator keeping rule of that region. You know, and again, it comes back to our not understanding. And look, I didn't either understand that Iraq is really like three different countries with three different complete cultures and all this stuff where it would be chaos if you took that strong man out of there. This idea that we're going to impose democracy on an area that's never had it is kind of, well, arrogant. But it was never about that. As it was explained to me, it was about the money. Which is why we, every September 11th, the call is open up the records. Let us all see what was presented to Congress. Rumsfeld's dead. Most of the people who Bush sent in to do this stuff are gone. Open up what was shown to our elected leaders. And I've been told, and in a little bit, I'm sure we're going to have one of those people tell me the same thing again, that if I was shown what he was shown, I would have gone along with it. He can't tell me what he was shown because it's sealed. So for the younger generation, the call is open up those records so that we get to see what happened and make sure it never happens again, which is why I'm a big supporter of transparency in government so that we're not fooled again. Now, on going into Iraq, I was never fooled. Never bought the aluminum tubes, never bought the cartoon drawings of mobile labs. Look, I knew Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And everyone did, because we gave them to him. He was our tin pot dictator. We put him there. But you could argue, had a lot to do with money and a lot to do with oil. If you remember, Operation Iraqi Liberation, oil. That was the original operational name for it before they turned it into Operation Iraqi Freedom. Oops on that one. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, a group of seven activists were arrested for unlawful entry into the Speaker McCarthy's office on Monday. And I, you know, of course, you know, the right wing losing their mind. This is just like January 6th. They should be conspiracy. And you know, this is where they're going with this, because this is what they do. They take these couple of people who did this, and now they're going to extrapolate it into some huge conspiracy, because, again, it's about both sidesism. And again, you know, you look at how they use the system to attack average, everyday working people. And I got that. It's shameless. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on his most recent article on just something like this. You remember last week we talked with Greg Palast about, you know, all the stuff going on with Trump in Georgia. And then the stuff you don't hear about a couple of protesters who protest Cop City getting almost the same, if not worse, charges under the RICO Act by the state of Georgia. Well, our next guest has written a new piece over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. That's why I've asked Will Bunch to come talk with him. He's a national columnist there at the Inquirer. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Hey, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
I got to get your thoughts first on, obviously, today being the anniversary of 9/11. You know, where were you? What were you doing? Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I was the writer for the Philadelphia Daily News who, whenever something huge in the world happened, I was the guy who had to write that story. So the minute the second plane hit the World Trade Center, which I just, it's funny, I almost never watched the Today Show, and I happened to be watching that morning, and that's where I was watching when those two planes crashed. I mean, the minute the second one goes, well, I guess I usually went into the office later, and I was like, well, I guess I'm going in. And we had a puppy who, it's been 22 years, so now she's long gone, but a puppy at the time who we were training, so I couldn't go to the office without taking her out in the backyard for 10 minutes. And I remember that, because I remember what a beautiful, do you remember, Rick, what a beautiful day that was? It was the bluest sky I've ever seen in my life. It was about 85 degrees, kind of warm, but not too hot. And it was a beautiful day. And I'm out here with this puppy thinking about, in my backyard, and thinking about the beauty of that and the horror I had just witnessed on TV, and how I was going to have to get in my car and go write about it. And yeah, I mean, it's just a day none of us will ever forget. And, you know, I wrote a column. They asked me to write a column 2 years ago for the 20th anniversary. And I wrote about that, what I just told you. And I wrote about how when I had to write a story, you know, we didn't know. I mean, maybe there were a few whispered suspicions that it was Osama bin Laden. But if you remember, we didn't know who did this on September 11th, 2001. And we didn't know how many people were dead. People were saying it could be 10,000. There was so much we didn't know. And I remember writing this story saying September 11th, 2001 will be remembered, you know, is the day that things would never be the same again for America. And, you know, 20 years later, I look back, it's like, wow, I said that? Because, and the thing is, what's weird is I was right, right? I mean, because I'm not always right, but I was right that time in the sense, but like I said in that column, we didn't know how things wouldn't be the same. Like, you know, it's weird because 9/11, I think, you know, for a very brief time, brought out so much of the best of us and the way that people responded, both, I'm certainly the really heroic people, the first responders, but even just the way everyday people all across the country responded, and everybody was outraged and unified with their neighbors. And, you know, it was the only time in the last 30 years that all the red, blue, Democrat, Republican stuff didn't matter that much for a few weeks. And then we ruined it, basically, we ruined it by using it as an excuse to go after Iraq, as an excuse to stay in Afghanistan for 20 years. And then we started turning against other people, people warned them when they created this Homeland Security apparatus. And sure enough, we created this, kind of build the wall regime against immigration. That was next. And this ties directly into what we're going to talk about with Cop City in Atlanta. But, then the next thing was using Homeland Security and these other powers against dissent, protest. Yeah. Remember in 2020 when the Trump administration was sending these, secret police type Homeland Security officers out to Portland, Oregon, to take on, the people they call Antifa, snatching people and putting them in vans. Remember that?
That doesn't get reported on in the right wing media. Never hear about that.
Yeah, but you and I talk about it, so that's good. That's something. So, I think the headline on my column was, 9/11 was the day we knew 9/11 was going to change America forever. We didn't know how bad it would be. I think the animosities that were and the hatred that was unleashed fueled right into our current crisis.
I was in Cleveland at the time, and I remember, you were saying that it unified us. I saw it as it unified some of us, but it did pit people against each other, especially foreigners. And Cleveland is a very segregated city. At least when I lived there, it was. So, immediately there was an attack on a church there. As I remember, some guy drove up the church steps. There was a whole bunch of anger outleashed on certain communities. And that's what really began the whole, tearing us apart. And also I remember, again, after 9/11, they rammed through the Patriot Act.
I went to a
League of Women Voters debate on the Patriot Act. They had a panel of three people who were for, three people who were against. The people who were against actually read the bill, actually read everything. The people who were for it, well, they got the cliff notes. But yeah. I remember people just saying, look, I want to be safe. I don't care. Give me a national ID card. Let me give you my thumbprint. I just want to be safe. And they played on that.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy the things that happened. I mean, I remember my kids were in elementary school at the time, and, their elementary school built this weird security setup, because they thought the terrorists were going to come to this, elementary school in the Philadelphia suburbs, and all the field trips that were canceled, and just weird stuff that we forget about now. And, but you mentioned the Patriot Act, and to me, that was that's when my mindset started to change. And, I tell people all the time that, that 2 year stretch from between 9/11 and the start of and the beginning of the Iraq war, I guess it was less than 2 years, actually, that period truly radicalized me. I honestly was a center left guy. I wouldn't say I was quite a both sides journalist, but, my perspective on things was much different. And, to use the overused term of the decade, I kind of got woke right after the Patriot Act, and really then when things turned to Iraq, and particularly with the fact that the media, which I thought, this is the media that we created after Watergate to protect the country from idiocy, instead the opposite happened. Instead, the vast majority of the media advanced this obvious, you could tell in real time it was a lie. And the fact that the media wasn't calling them out on this, I did the best I could from my little perch in the Philadelphia Daily News, but, that didn't do too much good, but it radicalized me. It really did.
Well, again, you look at where we are in this moment, where again the media spends a lot of time, you know, on the horse race and on you know the yeah. all the Trump stuff that's going on, and yet very few people, if any, and you know, last week I talked with Greg Palast about what's going on with these protesters down at this Cop City thing and being charged under the RICO Act and could face years in prison for simply protesting. Is it's insane, but you know, there's no coverage on this that I can really find.
I've seen some because I search for it, but you're right. If the average person isn't seeing the news about what's going on in Cop City, and you know,
so
it's,
before we start, what is Cop City? So folks know.
Oh sure. Well, it's the nickname that's been given to what the government calls the Atlanta Police Training Center. So Atlanta wants to spend $90 million, some of it's taxpayer money, some of it is donated by this foundation that's funded by every gigantic corporation in Atlanta that you can think of, Home Depot, Waffle House, Delta, the corporation that owns the one newspaper in town, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which you'll be shocked to learn constantly editorializes and beats the drum for this police training center, Cop City. You know, so they want to build this thing. It's going to have a mock city to teach these cops how to put down unrest, like the people who marched after George Floyd's murder, you know, and it's fascinating. You know, just last year, I think in 2022, there was this documentary that not too many people saw, but it was really fantastic, called Riotsville, USA. And what it chronicled was in the 1960s, after all the unrest, like after Martin Luther King was assassinated, they built not one but two of these mock cities to teach cops how, you know, instead of trying to fix these cities, they built mock cities to show cops how to crush protests. And so it's not a new idea, but you know, it's interesting. I mean, tying it all together with like 9/11. I mean, since 9/11, some of the things, you know, first we saw the militarization of local police, you know, these army surplus personnel carriers. Yep.
My little podunk town's got a tank.
Yeah, a tank, right? It's insane, right? And, you know, giving these towns the tanks and certainly the, you know, the riot cops who, you know, I heard some conversation the other day. People were talking about the famous 1968 Democratic convention in Chicago and the protests there. And they pointed out that it was terrible, but you see the cops out there in just their blue shirts and they have a nightstick, which is not great. But, and you look at the cops they sent out today with the masks and the stun guns and all the equipment. And it's just insane. So that's kind of where it started. Some of the tactics like kettling protesters and arresting hundreds of them. I mean, that's been going on since 1999, the 2000s, and
well, with the battle in Seattle. I mean,
yeah, that's why I said 1999. That's kind of where it all started, I think. But then in the last few years, and really accelerated after 2020 and the George Floyd protests, you've seen states passing a lot of stuff with oil companies and climate change, right? Where now it's a crime, you know, now it's like a major felony to do anything in or around a pipeline, or even the trespass on an oil pipeline is like a felony in some states now, especially red states. But these laws where, you know, you basically have the right to plow your car into a group of protesters and get away with it. Florida, of course, under DeSantis, passed an extreme anti-protest law a couple of years ago. And so what's happening in Cop City, you know, there've been a lot of protests. One thing about this police training center is it's being built in a very environmentally sensitive area that, you know, it's 85 acres of, you know, lush forest on the edge of Atlanta are being raised to build this project. And so it's attracted a lot of environmental activists, you know, eco call them eco warriors or whatever, but people who were willing to camp out in the woods and occupy the site and try, you know. And so in January of 2022, or no, I'm sorry, January of this year, 2023, there was a confrontation and a police officer shot and killed one of these eco protesters at the Cop City site, you know, and claimed that he was shot at and it was self-defense. And there's, you know, more holes in the police story than in a hunk of Swiss cheese, right? And then around the time, the state of Georgia, you know, and there's the Democratic prosecutors in the two relevant counties haven't covered themselves with glory, but really it is the Republicans, Brian Kemp and his, and this Republican attorney general who wants to succeed Brian Kemp, this guy named Chris Carr, who earlier this year, they lodged domestic terrorism charges against a few dozen of the protesters. Then they raided the office of the bail fund that all it does is raise money to, you know, when these protesters get locked up, they'll bail them out. Yeah. And they accused them of
aiding and abetting
money laundering.
Oh wow,
money laundering. Yeah, I mean, just insane. And so, you know, I've been fascinated by this story. And in June, I convinced my editors in Philadelphia to send me down there for 4 days and report as much as I could. You know, I mean, I kind of helicoptered in, I guess, but to report as much as I could. And I really tried to meet as many people from the community and activists and talk to people about what's really going on there.
Yeah. Now, we had talked with Greg Palast last week about this. And, you know, and he said, look, you know, the local district attorneys, you know, didn't charge people with this stuff. They charged them for the crimes that they committed, trespassing. If they broke a window, they got charged with breaking a window.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the whole thing about civil disobedience is, you know, I mean, you plan to get arrested. You are blocking a street or you're trespassing or whatever, and you know, not nonviolent civil disobedience. You know, and look, I you know, I don't know if you and Greg talked about this, but I mean, there have been some acts of violence in terms of net property violence, not against people, but there's been acts of.
That's what I said, if someone broke a window, you charge them for what they did.
Yeah, you vandalize a bulldozer or something. Okay, that's fine. But no, what they decided to do, and this was rumored when I was down there in June, and now they've done it, which is RICO charges. You know, if you've been following the Trump stuff, you know all about Georgia's RICO law now, and they have a pretty aggressive racketeering statute down there. Well, it's being used against people in an environmental and social justice protest movement are being charged as racketeers for taking part in this movement. And, you know, and some of the quote overt acts, as they call it, that are part of this racketeering enterprise are just ridiculous. You know, one of them was a guy signing ACAB, which, you know, stands for All Cops Are Bastards, you know, on a letter. That was an overt act. Somebody committed an overt act buying glue because apparently, I guess, they thought it protesters were going to glue themselves to something at the site, you know.
But here's the thing.
And this bail fund, raising bail, but you know, mutual aid, collectivism. They define anarchism, you know. And I'm not an anarchist personally, but I think it's a philosophy people can legitimately have and discuss. But not in Georgia, where anarchism has been defined as a crime, basically now under this indictment. It's really radical stuff.
So last question I've got for you on this, because, you know, I know some of my MAGA hat wearing friends are out there going, well, we should be able to build our cop city because we got to protect ourselves. We need cops keep us safe. And look, I support the police when they're not wrong. What do you say to people who go, you know, we need to enforce the law. We need to have, you know, people who are going to do this. And, you know, why does this matter to the red hats that were prosecuting people under the RICO Act for protesting?
Yeah, well, you know, the big thing in the long story I wrote back in June about Cop City, I got into this a lot, which is that, well, first of all, I mean, there are much less expensive and more reasonable options. I mean, this $90 million thing is kind of a Taj Mahal type thing. And it's a matter of civic priorities. You know, Atlanta is maybe the most gentrified city in America. They've seen their Black population in just a short time go from 62% to 47% because working class Black people are being driven out of Atlanta. You know, and this isn't just any city. This is Martin Luther King's city. This is the cradle of the civil rights movement. And you know, Black people are being driven out, and it's a matter of resources. The resources that could be used to help neighborhoods, help people stay in their homes, you know, and give people opportunities where they live with social programs, is instead being spent on police and this Taj Mahal. So yeah, people want to stop it. I mean, you know, I want a certain kind of better police training. I want them trained to be part of their community. I want them to be trained to not
de-escalate.
Yeah, to not be an occupying army, but to you know, see themselves as you know, people who are there to serve the community and not to lock up the community. But there's no evidence that Cop City would be that type of facility. You know, that it would further the kind of warrior cop policing that's been so detrimental
that we've seen on TV so much. The article, "Georgia Criminalizes Post George Floyd Protests and a New Blow to Democracy," written by Will Bunch. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Will, as always, fabulous stuff. I appreciate you taking some time, keeping us informed and up to date.
Oh, Rick, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, our good friend Will Bunch. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1851. That was the day that a Maryland planter named Edward Gorsuch was killed in Christiana, Pennsylvania. Gorsuch had come to Pennsylvania to try and recapture three Black men that had escaped from slavery on his farm outside of Baltimore 2 years earlier. A year after the men escaped, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act. This penalized helping those who had escaped slavery with a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. Emboldened by the law, slave catchers chased those who had made the journey to freedom in the North. Gorsuch received news that the men he was looking for were in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Two of the escaped slaves were at the farm of William Parker, a Black man who had also escaped slavery in Maryland. Located just north of the Mason-Dixon line, Lancaster had a well-established underground railroad network. An armed Black self-defense group had developed to stand against the slave catchers. Gorsuch and his son gathered a group of men and headed north. At the Parker farm, they were confronted by a group of at least 50 Black men armed with guns and pitchforks. Gorsuch refused to leave, and a gun battle erupted. Gorsuch was shot and killed in the exchange of fire. Parker, his family, and the three formerly enslaved men fled to Canada. 38 others who were there that day were charged with treason for taking part in the confrontation. This included Castor Hanway, a white man who had tried to defuse the standoff. None of the charged were ever convicted. In the South, slave owners were outraged that no one was punished. Tensions between the North and South sharpened. As a result, the country moved closer to the Civil War, the bloody conflict that finally ended slave labor. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter @laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently, lawyers for Donald Trump have asked the judge, Tanya Chutkan, to recuse herself because evidently, I don't know what cockamamie reason they came up with. She was a former assistant public defender. She was appointed by Obama. I don't know. Whichever one it was, that's what we're getting. Maybe it was because she was one of the tougher sentences on the January 6th people. Who knows? Now, here's the thing. This is where I'm talking to my lefty friends here. when she doesn't recuse herself, and she shouldn't, and should just throw this out, if that hasn't happened already, please don't call her a hero. Please don't put her on a pedestal. Don't call her brave. Don't do any of those things. This is a judge doing their job. Let's not elevate this stuff to make them social media stars or build them up in any way. They're doing their job. Give them credit for standing up in the face of adversity, for doing their job. I don't foresee this happening. Now, again, I'm no legal expert, but I just don't foresee it happening. Also, you remember that whole Elon Musk thing? How Musk said that he was buying up Twitter, you know, so that we could have free speech and all that. And then, you know, free speech, he charges people $5.99. You know, free speech, you know, only $5.99 to get a check mark. Evidently, the ex who is now formerly known as Twitter, evidently has been throttling back people looking for the New York Times stuff. Now remember, wasn't supposed to be this way. Weren't picking winners and losers, was opening free speech. We also heard over the weekend that Musk shut down Starlink in Ukraine, which evidently the Ukrainian military was trying to use a drone to hit a Russian ship. Shut it down because he didn't want things to get worse. This is what happens when you give billionaires this kind of power. When's he coming for you?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I come back to this. You know, I call every September 11th for Congress to open up what was shown to members to get them to vote to go into Iraq. And I think we need to renew that every year. I think we need to push for that. I want to know what was shown to our elected officials that got them to go, yeah, we need to be making this turn into Iraq instead of where we should have, at least I think, maintained our focus. But here to share some thoughts on the anniversary of 9/11 and some of the thoughts post 9/11. I have asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Career military man, spent years traipsing around through this. So I think his perspective important on this day. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, Rick. I always enjoy your show, brother.
So I want to get your thoughts on 9/11. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will tell you that I remember where I was when those towers fell, when the Pentagon was attacked. I was actually at Fort Polk, Louisiana. Now, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, but we had taken a battalion down to Fort Polk, and we were training them up and getting them ready for Kosovo. And I will never forget when I was stopped at a checkpoint where one of my NCOs said, "Sir, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center." And we were like, "Wow, that's horrible. You know, a plane crashed, probably lots of death." It was very, very, you know, it was horrible to hear.
Yeah. What a terrible pilot.
Yeah. We just like continued on with our mission, and it wasn't very long afterwards. I come right back through there. And then the same sergeant said, "Sir, a second plane has hit the tower and one has hit the Pentagon. We're under attack." And I will never forget, because when you are in the box, and that's what it's called down at Fort Polk, Louisiana, you are pretty much away from anything and everything. And at that point, we were all like dying for information. We wanted to know because, you know, now that we were under attack, this was a big deal. Yeah. So I found a
guy. Yeah, who's the enemy?
He hooked up inside of his Humvee, and we watched the towers fall. And I said, "This is going to change our lives." And it absolutely did. And from that moment on, it was go, 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 go. And I mean, it wasn't very long. We had troops in, you know, we had Osama bin Laden held up in the Tora Bora Mountains, and we should have killed him there. And then all of a sudden we pulled back because we needed to invade Iraq. You know, and once again, you know, weapons of mass destruction, there wasn't any. You know, so I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that are struggling. We lost a lot of good men and women. I mean, it's, you know, September the 11th will be in our memory for the rest of our lives. You know, and a lot come from that. You know,
and especially people like you who spent years engaging in, you know, for most people, you know, I think, you know, after 9/11, well, our patriotic duty, as I remember George Bush, you know, asking us, was to go shopping. But you actually, you know, you blood, sweat, and tears into this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, but that's what we did. I mean, I was a combat soldier. So, you know, be honest with you, I can remember when we were loading up to go and we literally looked at each other and was like, this is our Super Bowl. You know, you're a combat soldier. You train every day for combat. And now it's time to put it to use. And we went. And, you know, we lost a lot of good people. We're forever, you know, affected by it. I mean, I got post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, anybody, you cannot live over there where mortars and rockets and you're getting into firefights. And you know, I've been in two explosions. I mean, you know, you will never forget that. And it will always be with you, you know, and there's very few combat units out there that have an experienced loss. I will tell you that I'm a combat engineer officer. And I, you know, ever since, you know, 9/11 happened and everybody started deploying, you know, our jobs was to find the IEDs. And usually we found them underneath our vehicles. And, you know, I tell people, you will not find an engineer unit today in the United States Army that doesn't have soldiers that are missing legs and arms. They stay in the military. They pass the ability to stay in. And literally, they pop off their legs, and, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest.
Well, you know, it's a bad thing that they lost, you know, arms and legs, but, you know, the fact that they still want to stay side by side with their brothers and sisters, even if it means going back to combat. I know lots of guys that were walking patrols in Iraq and Afghanistan with a false leg.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, obviously from that moment forward, it's been politicians lining up to take photos with soldiers and wrapping themselves in the flag and I mean, especially our Republican friends. So when you look at what Tommy Tuberville is doing in the Senate, you know, blocking all these nominations, and we know why he's doing it. It has nothing to do really with the religious, you know, abortion stuff. It has everything to do with hoping Trump comes back into office and is able to, you know, appoint who patronize, you know, do the patronage appointments that they want. I'm curious, when you look at this, what do you see?
Well, first and foremost, I see somebody who's never had the guts to pick up a rifle and man a post, and he's trying to literally hurt our men and women in uniform. And we're talking, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, Space Force, all of this. You know, what he is doing right now, he's blocking the promotions of over 300 officers. And by the end of this year, it's going to be double that. And understand that what that does is that places our nation in jeopardy. Think about a general officer and the requirements that it takes to be a general officer. And when a general officer decides to retire or move on to another position, there's always another person that's a general officer that is ready and able to move in and assume the duties and responsibilities of that role.
Right.
What Tommy Tuberville is doing right now is he has got all of that on a halt. So if a general leaves a position, there's nobody right now in the line to move in and take that role. So what means is that you may have somebody that has to step up to the plate and occupy that position, but he may or she may not be qualified to do that job. And when you have people that aren't qualified to do that job, you can't guarantee that they can do the job correctly. And if they can't do the job correctly, it will affect soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, all across the military in a very negative way. Tommy Tuberville is absolutely wrong with what he is doing. And when this is over with, legislation needs to be wrote in Washington, D.C. to make sure there is never another time when one person can literally hold our military at bay. This is un-American for him. And it's absolutely, you know, we every single person in Washington, D.C., Republican or Democrat, should be livid at Tommy Tuberville right now. He is using our military as his gang, and we're not a gang.
But he said it has nothing to do with national security. He said this doesn't,
yes, it does,
do anything.
Yes, it does. It absolutely is placing us at risk. You know, he's not thinking this through. He doesn't understand. Imagine that you spent your whole military career. You've got 30 plus years in the military. You are literally ready to cross over into the general ranks. You've got multiple combat deployments under your belt. You know, you've done everything. You've attended every single school, and you're literally ready to take up, you're ready to assume the duties and responsibilities, but you can't because of one guy who is playing these games. You know, and this is not the thing. This is not the way we do it. This is un-American for Tommy Tuberville. He is an absolute joke. And once again, this has to be, if there's not legislation that is created after this to make sure that somebody like him can never do this again, then absolutely something is wrong in Washington, D.C.
Well, this is where, again, I come back to the people who voted for him. You know, this is where we're supposed to, again, we love the military. We talk about it all the time. We've got photo ops and all kinds of things. This is supposed to be where we throw the bum out. And I say, look, you know, I've said for years, this guy's the dumbest guy in the Senate. He's doing this for a reason, and it's got nothing to do with abortion. Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah, he's just trying to be, he's trying to have his way. But at the end of the day, you know, this is, I guarantee you, you know, these are the type of people that will knock down their grandmother to get a picture with the veteran coming off of an airplane who's been in the Middle East for a year. You know, they love veterans when it benefits them. They love veterans when they get to take photographs. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, every single veteran in Tommy Tuberville's state should be livid at him right now. They should be writing him. They should be lighting him up and letting him know that there will never be another opportunity for him to ever win another race if he doesn't fix what he's done wrong here. And this is absolute garbage. Yeah, our soldiers deserve better.
The other part of this is, and you talk about national security, the other part of this is this shows weakness across the globe. I mean, this shows how, you know, our differences, you know, will magnify, you know, and you know, it used to be we fought and everything stopped at the water's edge. This is much bigger than that. So I've only seen one Republican come out, this Michael McCall, a Republican from Texas, who said it's paralyzing our Defense Department, what Tuberville's doing. He's really the only person I've seen who's come out and said anything about this.
Yeah, everybody on the Armed Service Committee should be livid right now. They should be coming out and speaking out. You know, I mean, you are absolutely right. This shows people all across the globe that we're really not as solid as we have always tried to promote us being. You know, it shows that we've got issues. And once again, if nothing is done to make sure it never happens again, I mean, it literally makes people think twice about, you know, our national security. And you know, I would tell you, the Republican Party that absolutely championed Donald Trump and continues to do the things, they don't even understand that we cannot keep going down this path. We cannot have people in Congress. We cannot have a person occupying the highest seat of the land that has no morals and no values. We cannot have a commander in chief that literally is willing to steal classified documents and probably sell them. I mean, you know, and what's sad is that these Republicans, they should be begging for forgiveness right now. And instead, this is the kind of garbage that they're trying to push. You know, I'm just sickened at Jim Jordan and his actions and Tommy Tuberville. This is absolutely, they look at this as a game. And let me tell you something, what they are doing right now is affecting people's lives. It's affecting not just the military, it's affecting their families. It's affecting everything.
Now, it's in particular our national security. I'm with you. But, yep. Rich, I appreciate the thoughts. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon. Thanks so much, buddy.
Anytime, brother. Always, man. I appreciate you.
Our good friend, Rich O'Jett. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, this Tuberville thing is just, it's just beyond me. It makes fight your issue if you have to, but you don't hold the country, you don't hold the country hostage. But again, this is a party that's, has a history of this. Look at the debt ceiling fights, always till the end. Let's go to the phone. We got CJ in Madison on line one. CJ, how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call, Rick. You and I have fought a number of times, and I appreciate you taking my call. Don't always agree, and I don't agree with you or your guest, because Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Senate, could bypass these issues in the military from Tubermill, but he wants to politicize it and keep it as an issue. And I hear you always tell only part of the story along with your guests, because when you look back at Iraq, how many UN resolutions did Iraq not comply with the UN and the International Atomic Energy Association? How many resolutions did it take for them not to comply, not let inspectors in? They did use mass destruction, killed 300,000 of his own people.
I said right from the beginning, CJ, that he had weapons of mass destruction. He got them from us. That's how we knew.
And he hit them.
Yeah. Well, they destroyed them. No, they destroyed them years before.
18 resolutions, Rick.
As much as I'm not a fan of Scott Ritter, maybe you should look at his reporting. They didn't find them.
I'll be happy to, but it took 18 resolutions. And finally, George W. said, this is the last chance. We're not going to give you that. They kept, Saddam was not forthcoming, wouldn't let inspectors in, and played the cat and mouse game, and the UN did nothing. And we've now got over 100, our open border, we now have over 100 terrorists that have been on our watch list that are now in our country. And the mere fact that there's maybe more, because we've had 7 million illegals cross during this president's do nothing.
Yeah, I don't know where you're getting that number from. I don't know where you're getting that number from. But CJ, here's the thing. We may agree, by going into Iraq, we opened up massive can of worms. I don't know what your position would be, but we destabilized the globe because of this. And for what? For what we already knew. We don't get to see what was shown to our elected officials that got us into going into Iraq. But what we do now know is there was nothing there to be found. So we went in there on a lie and we found nothing, CJ. And that's my problem. And I'm done with this. I appreciate the thoughts, though. Thanks so much. No, this is, again, one of these things. We're going to relitigate the history of what not we now know. There was nothing there. And we didn't. We were told we're going to get bin Laden. There was no connection between bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. There wasn't. But hey, Halliburton made a lot of money. contract defense contractors made a ton of money. And this is my problem with again, I go back to that era of talking about Smedley Butler, who I haven't thought about in a bit. And seriously, read, you know, his pamphlet, War is a Racket. The idea that we're going to make rich people richer and poor people dead. And that's what we did. And it's frustrating to go back and think about, you know, where we were as a nation on this day before all of the decisions that were made. It's heartbreaking. Because we chose these people. And no, I'm never going to go along with the idea that Iraq was a good idea. I've yet to find someone who was there who said it was a good idea. And of course they violated UN resolutions. I mean, you think about, you know, what... I go back to H.W. Bush going into Iraq. And this is one of those things I remember in 91. Because I knew people who went there. We were sold on going into Iraq the first time. Again, on a lie. There was a candy striper. Young girl on 60 Minutes. Still remember it like it was yesterday. She was telling the story about how, you know, in Kuwait, she was a candy striper at a hospital and Iraqi soldiers came in and were bayoneting babies and throwing them out of incubators. She went in front of a congressional hearing and told this story. It was heartbreaking. The nation, angry, wanting vengeance. Turns out it didn't happen. She was never there. It turns out she was the daughter of a diplomat. A PR firm came up with the whole thing. It was a sale job. And why were we going into Iraq? Because the Kuwaitis were doing diagonal drilling into Iraqi oil fields. And Saddam went to his buddies, us, and asked, hey, can we stop this? And if you believe what April Glaspie has to say, we said, no, we have no interest. Her exact quote was, reportedly, we have no interest in Arab nation border disputes, which was the green light for Hussein to go into Kuwait. And then, well, we had to go and defend Kuwait because, well, I'm not sure why. And this started that snowball. So our guy, the guy we put into power, now a little chafe over the fact that, you know, he got slapped on the wrist. And Dick Cheney knew, you break it, you buy it. Dick Cheney knew you go in there, you're going to be seen as occupiers and not liberators. Dick Cheney knew. Did it anyway. Why? Lots of profits for Halliburton. And we went in thinking, hey, it's going to be that 2-week, you know, fun and sun on the beach. It's going to be over in no time. How many lives did we lose? How much treasure? How much blood and treasure were spilled? Again, over a lie. And this is where I keep coming back to this. And you read Richard Clark's book where he talks about all of the failures that led up to allowing 9/11 to happen. The August 6th presidential daily briefing that evidently Bush must not have read. Because he didn't know that anyone would attack, you know, buildings with planes, except the one he was in Georgia, where they thought someone was going to attack the hotel he was in with a plane. But never mind. Don't let reality get in the middle of all that, because we got UN resolutions. Again, a UN. And I love when people who generally bash the UN for being toothless and worthless, then you go, see, the UN resolutions. Cripe's sake. I'm curious your thoughts. Was it worth it? Was it worth going into Iraq? Was it mission accomplished? Was the big banner and the sock in the drawers with the flight suit, was that all that worth it? because we've done exactly what most people predicted, and I too. We haven't taken care of the people who are suffering from that. And no, I don't believe Schumer has the ability to go over Tuberville. But here we are. I do find it interesting, though, that there are still defenders of Tuberville. That's quite remarkable to me. And especially on this day. I do want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. A lot more to get to. Quick break, right back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So clearly, being 9/11, today I have been thinking about my next guest all day long. And we've had this conversation a number of times, and unfortunately we're going to have it again, because every September 11th I call for Congress to open up all of the stuff that they showed to people like my next guest, so we all get to see what was on display. That's why I've asked my good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So let's get to this. Thoughts on this terrible anniversary?
I mean, I was to be in the World Trade Center that day, and because of my friend and your friend, Ellen Ratner, I didn't go. I changed the date to the week before, but I ended up in the Capitol and was part of the, you know, evacuation. Actually ordered it with the Assistant Sergeant of Arms for the House. And, you know, it's a traumatic day for the whole country and for the people, the staff that worked there, and fleeing for their lives, knowing that a plane was headed there within 14 minutes. I mean, the brave Capitol Hill police that stayed and made sure everybody got out. It was a day of trauma for this country, and we just won't forget it.
Yeah, I mean, and it led to all of the events that came afterwards, and yeah. I argue led to a lot of the divisions that we are suffering through right now in this country. And you know, one of the things we've talked about extensively over the years is you know, what you were shown, and how you know you want to be able to tell us mm-hmm. what was shown. Why can't we know that?
Well, and I did an interview today, Rick, and I separated into two parts. One, what happened in the Capitol, what we did afterwards, working with Steny Hoyer, you know, who was until last year the number two Democratic member in the House, and no politics. We all worked together, you know, to do something. That was the one thing I talked about. The other thing I talked about was the aftermath politically, legislatively, the aftermath. And we can go down a list of things: Homeland Security, the temporary Homeland Security Committee that became permanent, the Patriot Act, the Great Patriot Act, which was unbelievable within itself. Don't let an emergency that happened in the country go unused. You know, use it to try to spy further on the American people. But the two biggies, one, you know, the entire release of the report. What happened? You know, where were the Saudis? What was the influence? Released a report that the Justice Department under Bush at the time said that, they checked it all out. Well, okay, let's see it. What did you check out? You know, who was cleared? But then the biggie of all, which was the, again, the fear, the aftermath, what was going on in the country, the corporate media bought into it, groups pushed for information that was not credible, and then we were shown information, which I spoke about this today, Rick, and you and I spoke about this maybe on 10 or 14 anniversaries, I guess. Why can people not know what I saw and others saw? Why can they not know what we saw? And those people that showed us that material, they need to be drug in and asked, who above you authorized you to give this material as fact of law, as a fact that, you know,
the Congress needed to do something. Who did that? Who commissioned it? Who was involved? That's what needs to happen. It hasn't happened. It probably will happen 40 years after I'm off this planet. Maybe.
How long has it been since Kennedy?
Kennedy, right, 63. True.
And this is the frustrating part of this. And I think this should be universal. This should not be partisan. This is one of those things that I call for every year. I want that transparency.
Well, exactly. I would like to know the people that gave us this information. I'd like to know, again, where did they get it? Why was it vetted and found to be accurate when we know now it wasn't? There weren't weapons of mass destruction. We went into an entire war with the loss of American lives, the loss of Iraqi lives, invading a country. Over what?
But Bob, yeah, I just had someone remind me that, Hussein didn't listen to UN resolutions.
Oh, well, let's put it this way. And I'm not saying we should do this, but I always compare this. When members of Congress, and the way I answer this is that if there was a vote I could ever go back and take back, it would be that one. People say, well, isn't the worst thing Jack Abramoff scandal? No, the worst thing was that vote. And I would like to be able to go back in time and realize that we were being lied to. That's number one. But number two, when members of Congress answer, well, Saddam was a bad guy. Well, you know what? I think that the premiers of China are worse. I really do.
I do too.
In a lot of ways. Let's go in. Why didn't we invade Beijing? If we're going to start going after bad guys, let's go to Beijing tomorrow.
Kim Jong-il at the time.
Oh, yeah. Let's throw him in since you're in that area of the world. Sure.
Yeah, I come back to this moment and this day, this anniversary. I'm hoping at some point becomes a unity thing as opposed to what sadly we've seen. We've seen this be used as what divides us.
Right. And again, people say, well, it's done. It's the past. Well, we're going to repeat that mistake at some point in time if we don't know how to look at reality, factual information, and how this all goes down. Until we know that, I would like to know. We are not going to learn the lesson of history.
Yeah. And the Patriot Act and all the things that came after that are still in place. All the,
of course.
And this, again, this is where we should all universally say, okay, we're beyond this now. Let's move past it. Let's undo that overreach. Let's undo that terrible stuff.
Sure. And they can do it. And, admit they made a mistake. Admit they were duped. Find out how you were duped, and throw it out there. There's nothing wrong with transparency on these issues, nothing at all. Oh, is there some embarrassment? Maybe, I don't know. Is that why the Kennedy assassination can't be entirely released? Because there's embarrassment there? It's not national security, it's embarrassment.
Yeah. Speaking of national security, we still have hundreds of military people not getting promotions, not moving up the chain of command. And I look at what Tommy Tuberville is doing. I find, especially on this day, I find it disgraceful. But is there anything that can be done? I've been told here recently that Chuck Schumer can override all of this, and Chuck Schumer can move this stuff right along. Can he?
Well, here's what has to happen. And I'm going to disgust myself when I use the word nuclear option. This is the hyper media of the press of D.C. Well, the Senate's going to use the nuclear option. Well, isn't this a profiling courage? They're going to use the nuclear option. You know what the nuclear option means? You vote like you should in a democracy. 51 votes. You have 100 people, 51 passes. That's the nuclear option. And what they ought to do is nuke the whole thing and just stop this nonsense where one senator, because this happened, this is the Republican side, one senator of any party can do what Tuberville's doing. Tuberville is holding back hundreds of people that need to be in key positions within our military, hundreds of people, not just the head one or two, hundreds. And it just ought to be stopped. I mean,
So what I'm hearing you say is you're talking about ending the filibuster.
Well, sure. I've been against cloture and you know, if you want to filibuster, stand up and, you know, talk about things. They use the cloture rule, you know, where you've got to have the 61. You have to have, I mean, the 60 votes. You have to have it. Why? That's not in the Constitution. And you know what I would love to see? This would be beautiful. Both Schumer and McConnell could get a gold star for this one. It would be nice to end it now, but let's say Schumer and McConnell make a deal. They hold a vote, and they hold a vote tomorrow within the Senate, and they undo the cloture vote, and it takes effect after the next election. So, you know, you don't know who's running the Senate. Might be Republican, might be Democrat. After the next election, if they don't want to do it while they're all sitting there, do it after the next election. Do something, you know, productive.
Or do it, or you know, 5 years down the road where you don't know where anything's going to be.
Yeah, right. 5 years. Sure. It wouldn't matter. And that would be a wonderful thing to do, because this needs to end. And the fact that one senator can do this to an entire government is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
And obviously he's not getting enough pressure from his home state.
Yeah, or from his own party. I mean, again, you know, I look at on this day especially, where Republicans and Democrats too, but Republicans for the most part have wrapped themselves in the flag and gotten every photo op they could possibly get with people in uniform, especially overseas. Why aren't they screaming at Tuberville, going, "Hey, have your fight on a different field, not this one"?
Right, right.
But again, you know, there's a lot of things we should be ending. You know, the filibuster being one of them. And, let's not forget, you know, the government shutdown we may be careening towards at any moment because, well, we got a debt ceiling, Bob. We got a debt ceiling.
Well, first of all, one of the greatest things that I thought, well, one of the only things I thought when McCarthy became speaker that was good, that was in there, was not the fact that one person can take the speaker out, that's ridiculous, but the fact that they were going to go back to the appropriation bills one by one. I thought, here we go. You air it all out. You air it out line by line. Citizens get to hear things. Right now, anyone listening to this show, your option is to say to, you know, your member, you know, don't do or do the either one, the continuing resolution. When they do these one by one, they have to start to debate every issue within every line item within every agency. And you have a chance as a citizen to say, I know you've got, you know, Head Start's coming up. I want to support Head Start. You know, and they've got to go line by line, item by item. The way they're doing this, they just put the whole thing together. They punt it down the road for 3 months, 4 months, eventually 1 year because it's an election year. That's what they do. Now, the Republicans promised to not do it that way. They promised to do item by item. That promise is broken. They only did what? One? Did they do one bill, was it?
I think it was
one. I can't even remember what it was. They did one bill. And they should have done, I think they had...
But that's a lot of work, Bob.
Well, it is. Exactly.
It's a lot of work.
True. That's true. They'd have to put, they would have to stop the circus atmosphere and the theatrics. Marjorie Taylor Greene would actually have to stop some of the circus theatrics and actually look at a few things that are going on the floor. Well, she'll still find a way to do it. But
you mean like calling for Southern states to secede from the union?
Something like that? Right, right. So they've broken that promise, and now they're up against the wall. So the speaker is going to have to do two things. One, be sensitive to passing something on a continuing basis that the Democrats will like in the House and the Senate. He's going to have to do it. Otherwise, guess what happens again? Yeah, it comes to a halt. That's what would happen. It would come to a halt.
Yeah.
So he's got to craft something that he's going to get some Democrat votes on, because he's going to lose probably, I don't know, 20 to 25. He won't lose much over that, but he's going to have to do something with a minority leader to be able to get votes.
Did you see this story with this former Republican representative, Denver Regelman? Did you see,
no.
Did you see the story with him where he's talking about, and it's over at HuffPost, he's talking about how the first time he met his colleagues in the House Freedom Caucus, And it's one of these things where, you know, he said it blew his mind at you know, the ridiculous claims that came out of these people. And he said it was the first time he had ever heard the conspiracy theory of a one world algorithm that evidently these House caucus people were saying was, you know, was to shut down conservative speech on all social media, which according to this guy is impossible. But he said, quote, "I'm sitting here in my first Freedom Caucus meeting as my head explodes thinking, how did these individuals get elected?" He said, "The old saying is it takes you 6 weeks to figure out how did all these other people get around me to get elected. Well, it took me 6 minutes because, you know, all of the crazies are in one caucus, which is, you know, my congressman, Scott Perry, being the head of the Kook caucus. It's kind of interesting that he pointed this out.
Right. Now, he's out of there. He was from Virginia, right?
Yes, Virginia.
Yeah, he was from Virginia. Right. And he was actually, he had something to do with the House Select Committee that was probing January the 6th.
Correct.
I think, yeah, right. So, if he's saying that he went in there and there was conspiracy theories, I would buy that they probably promote them. They come up with all kinds of things, algorithms, this and that. I had somebody working on my property one time who didn't work by the end of the day, that was part of a group, and he said, "Now I know that they take lunch breaks and they drink children's blood in the Capitol." And of course, you know me, so I responded, "No, they do it at dinner break. They don't do lunch break. No, it's dinner.
It's dinner.
Get it straight."
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, "No, that doesn't happen. No, I was out there. No, it doesn't happen." Then by the end of the day, I'm like, "Okay, we finished that project. I won't need you tomorrow."
Yeah,
but
no.
I actually heard this from somebody.
No, it's like all of those things that are out there. And I use you as the example because, if you serve one term, I had someone tell me you serve one term of Congress, you get health care and pension for life. I'm going, "No, that's not true. I have a friend who was there for years, didn't get health care and pension for life."
Right. Yeah, my heart attack that I'm still paying for, believe me, I didn't get it. Well, I had a relative that was circulating that. And I called her up and I'm like, "Will you quit circulating that? You know, the congressional kids get free college." I mean, all these things that I think I looked at the 16 or so items there, and there was one that I had actually approved myself when I chair House Administration, where you could offer, you could use your congressional account if you hired somebody and they worked X amount of time to help them with some of their student loans, you know. But beyond that, there was nothing that was accurate in those. And they circulate around and people believe them.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, but it's like anything. If it's enough repetition, enough people are saying it from enough different angles, and this is what the right understands masterfully, they saturate people's minds with BS, then people, you know, hey, you know, you want to know stuff, so you learn by osmosis, and boom, you take it at face value. And here we are with people believing some of the most ridiculous, outrageous stuff.
And if members of Congress are promoting it, in the congressional caucus, what do you expect?
Yeah. Well, they had to get elected by somebody.
Right.
Scary, scary stuff. Mm-hmm. But Bob, as always, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you,
thanks,
Rick,
for sharing your memories on 9/11.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. Today in labor history, we pause to remember the events that took place on the morning of September 11th. The year was 2001. Terrorists hijacked planes and intentionally crashed them into the Twin Towers in New York City and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Nearly 3,000 people were killed in the attack, including 634 union members. They were members of the fire and police unions that had responded to help those at the scene of the attack. They were also pilots and flight attendants on the crashed planes. 343 firefighters died on that day. It was the deadliest firefighter disaster in U.S. history. Before September 11th, the greatest loss of firefighters in an urban building collapse fire occurred in Chicago in 1910. 21 firefighters were killed while fighting a fire in the stockyards. 11 years after the September 11th attack, Harold Schattenberger of the International Association of Firefighters recalled their sacrifice. At the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, our members gave everything they had. The best that this union and this nation have to offer was demonstrated in their courageous response. In the aftermath of September 11th, the Firefighters Union worked to improve benefits and protections for their members and their families. In particular, the Uniformed Firefighters Association Local 94 and Uniformed Fire Officers Association Local 854 lobbied Washington officials on these issues. In 2010, President Barack Obama signed the James Zagroda 9/11 Health and Compensation Act into law. The act was named after a police officer who developed a fatal respiratory disease while working at recovery efforts at Ground Zero. The act provided medical monitoring and treatment to World Trade Center responders. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Number of emails from folks telling me where they were on this day, and thank you for your stories. You know, again, it's all the same stuff, the vivid memory. And here's the weird thing. I got like 15 emails from people all saying the exact same thing. What a beautiful day it was. A picturesque day, Norman Rockwell kind of beautiful day. You know, all of these, it's ingrained in our memory. And there's part of me that goes, it was such a horrible tragedy that we had to find something positive. And I remember it as, you know, it was, I think Will Bunch had one of the most beautiful days he'd ever seen. And I'm going, you know, I remember beautiful days before. But that one sticks in our minds because I think of just how terrible everything was that day. TB from Santa Fe, you know, points out that, you know, like me, you had a relative in the hospital. And, you know, they write that I'm correct. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. He says, I had a huge argument with a friend who felt that it didn't matter, that we needed to send a message. I asked her what message, that we could bomb, you know, whoever, the, you know what, whatever, whenever we're mad. She answered that Saddam was a bad guy. And I reminded her, as I said, the U.S. put him in power to poke a stick at the Shah of Iran. She later joined the FBI to fight terrorism. Our friendship has never been the same. War, he says, doesn't just destroy the targeted enemy. It destroys those of us at home as well. And every war leaves more damaged soldiers behind that our government simply kicks to the curb. That has always been my fear. And I've said this before, you know, before we get into these adventures, you should be putting that money aside for what's coming. They finish up with, in addition to all the discarded machines of war making it into our police force, example, Santa Fe is a sanctuary city. Does it really need a Bearcat SWAT Hummer? I don't know. You know, I live in a small town. They got a tank. And you know, we talked earlier about Cop City in Atlanta and wanting to build that. As Iraq and all that was going on, I was talking about the crowd control techniques that they were going to eventually bring home. And what we got is we got kettling. We got all kinds of stuff. And overseas, lots of toys. You know, the goodbye gun that sends electric waves at you. It's like a taser, only like a ray gun. Makes you feel like you're on fire. Sound cannons and all kinds of fun toys. Because eventually, when authoritarianism finally takes over, and I view Trump as an authoritarian, and across the globe, what we're seeing is the rise of authoritarianism. When that happens, these things that they're putting in place comes for all of us. And eventually everyone is in the shark tank. Eventually everyone is the flavor of the month. So this isn't, oh, they're going after somebody I don't agree with. This is eventually all of us. So I appreciate everyone sharing their thoughts on this day. No, I'm not gonna finish up on that. I do want to thank my good friend Max Burns today. He invited me to come on. He was guest hosting for Dean Obadalla over on Sirius XM, and we had an opportunity to talk some big labor issues. So if you want, check out Dean Obadalla's show from today. You'll find my part of it. I know he puts out a podcast. And because I think, you know, this week we're going to spend a lot of time talking about labor issues as the UAW and the contract talks with the big three automakers ticks down to the deadline of midnight, the 14th. Will there be a big strike across the country? Will we see auto workers in the streets, or will they get somewhere near the 46% pay increases that they're demanding? And again, that number comes from, that's what the executives have lined their pockets with over the last 4 years. Sean Fain, the UAW head, didn't just dream that number up. He said, hey, look, this is what you've gotten. It's time for us to get what we earn. And, you know, this is an interesting moment in our history. This is an opportunity to bring working people together to make lives better. And I know it's almost sacrilegious to talk about, you know, labor issues and worker issues on this day, but I believe the labor movement and smart government policy is how we reunite this country, how we bring us back to somewhere near the same line, how we undo the horrible of the past and give working people an opportunity and maybe heal some divides. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got any questions, comments, something I said got under your skin? I want to hear it. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Or just go to thericksmithshow.com. Always there, always available. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.